Doors at 5 p.m., skates hit the track at 6 p.m. Tickets can be purchased online at madisonrollerderby.org/tickets or at the door. Madison Roller Derby's fourth game of the season is Saturday, March 16th at 5 p.m. at the arena at Alliant Energy Center in Madison. Supporting community nonprofits since 1975, this is WORT 89.9 FM Madison, listener-sponsored community radio.
Hello, I'm Roisin Hasty with the BBC News. At least 50 migrants are reported to have died trying to reach Europe from Libya after their overloaded dinghy broke down and drifted at sea for several days. Survivors say the engine cut out 3 days into their crossing of the Mediterranean. Stefano Fasano sent this report from Rome.
The French charity SOS Mediterranean says the migrants had been at sea for a week and had run out of food and water. A rescue vessel intercepted the rubber dinghy and rescued the remaining survivors. Some explained that more than 60 other passengers had already died at sea. Two people who were unconscious were lifted to hospital in Sicily by the Italian Coast Guard. The NGO confirmed they haven't managed to agree with the Italian authorities on where to disembark the survivors on board.
Despite widespread international concern about the safety of civilians in Gaza's overcrowded Rafah city, Israel has announced plans to push ahead with an offensive against Hamas there. The Israeli military said such an assault was the only way to fully remove the group. It plans to move nearly 1.5 million displaced Palestinians in the city to what it described as humanitarian islands in the middle of the Gaza Strip. A representative of the community in Nigeria, from where close to 300 schoolchildren were kidnapped last week, has said it will be impossible for the ransom to be raised as the families are so poor. On Wednesday, the kidnappers phoned to demand hundreds of thousands of dollars. Here's our Africa editor, Will Ross.
Jibrin Kwadabe from Kuriga in Kaduna State says many of the families can't even afford three meals a day, so raising the ransom of hundreds of thousands of dollars is out of the question. He said the Nigerian students aged between 7 and 12 were forced to march for vast distances through the bush and were extremely weak without food and water. Mr. Kwadabe told the BBC that the gunman had told him during the phone call that they'd seized the children because military aircraft had been attacking, killing them and their cattle. The community leader said the parents of the missing children were in a desperate state, so traumatized they're unable to sleep or eat.
More than 2 years after Russia's full-scale invasion of Ukraine, the NATO Secretary General says Ukrainian troops are running out of ammunition, but not courage. Jens Stoltenberg told reporters that the alliance had the capacity to deliver what Ukraine needed and must now show the political will to do so.
The NATO allies are not providing Ukraine with enough ammunition, and that has consequences on the battlefield every day. The fact that the Russians are able to outgun the Ukrainians every day, of course, is a huge challenge. It's one of the reasons why the Russians have been able to make some advances on the battlefield over the last weeks and months.
You're listening to the latest world news from the BBC.
WORT thanks its listener sponsors and Mineral Point Opera House, presenting A.J. Lee and Blue Summit on Sunday, March 24th at 7 p.m. Drawing from influences such as country, soul, swing, rock, and jam music, the band uses the lens of bluegrass as a vessel through which to express and explore the thread that binds and unifies all great music. More information and tickets are available at mineralpointoperahouse.org.
Support for this program comes from WORT's listener sponsors and Isthmus Newspaper. Isthmus is back on newsstands the first Thursday of every month, and now a nonprofit. Isthmus continues to expand its independent coverage of local government, the arts, and all things Madison at isthmus.com.
Support for this program is provided by WORT's listener sponsors and the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers Local 2304. Local 2304 is a small local union with a big agenda, bringing power to the people by representing the workers who provide safe and reliable gas and electric service at MG&E, the professional union reps at Madison Teachers Incorporated, the field organizers and canvassers at For Our Future, and the staff collective right here at WORT. More information about the union is available on their website at ibew2304.com.
Morning. It's 8:06 and you are tuning to WORT 89.9 FM in Madison, Wisconsin. My name's Tony Castaneda, and it's time for the Thursday, March 14th, 2024 edition of the 8 o'clock Buzz. Joined in the studio, of course, by my guy, Eli, producer. What else do you do?
That's mostly it.
Wait. No, it ain't. You're on the wrong mic.
I'm on three.
Dang it.
Wait,
what do you do again?
I'm on three, Tony.
All right, I got it.
Don't let them know I'm the engineer. You're doing the engineering.
Yeah, well, you're the producer, so.
Yeah, so what? I'm supposed to have taught you how to do it?
Yeah. Yeah. How's that producing going, man?
You know, I do a good job. Like, I sent at least two or three emails yesterday, Tony. That's right. That's the job. The job is to show up, make sure the door is unlocked, make sure the mics are clean, and send a couple emails.
There you go. Maybe greet the guests as they get
Maybe.
In.
Maybe. So. Not always, depending on who they are.
We do have a show today, though, man, which is good. Good job, producer.
Yeah. Hey, anytime we have a show, my job was done well.
All right. Well, our first guest is, of course, we're going to be touching base with our good friend Charlie Preusser, our Western Wisconsin correspondent.
Yeah, the remote. The Tony Castaneda remote correspondent.
You're right. What Unfortunately, he's caught in this big city traffic here in Madison. Yeah. Coming over there from Soldier's Grove. Nothing like the traffic we got here, right?
Yeah, so if you're driving right now, look to your left, look to your right. If you see a guy who looks like he's stressed on his way trying to get to a radio interview.
That's Charlie Preusser on his way. He's coming down here any minute. Don't worry, Charlie. We won't interview until you get here.
Yeah.
Also be speaking with artists in residence here at the UW-Madison Marlin Hall. It was just featured this week, I think, in a story in the Wisconsin State Journal from, just yesterday's paper, as a matter of fact.
Oh, wow.
So we'll be talking to him and about what he's been doing here in Madison and his project, Dear Black Future.
Awesome.
We got that, and then who you got? You got some of your buddies coming, right?
Yeah, we got Michael Thomas, good friend of mine, member of Atlas Improv and one of the producers of the Endurance Improv Festival, which is happening at Atlas Improv next Thursday, Friday, and Saturday.
What is that?
I don't know if you know that, Tony. Atlas Improv is turning 20 years old.
Wow.
We've been doing improv here in Madison for 20 years, so in celebration of that, we're doing the Endurance Improv Festival.
Which is?
March 21st, 22nd, 23rd, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, where we'll be doing 20 hours of improv over the course of the weekend. So
it's not going to be 72 hours straight improv. Like, that would be cool.
That would be nuts, but we got to get to 72 years in Madison first.
Not only that, you'd have even a lesser audience than you normally get.
Yeah. Hey, man.
No, I'm kidding, man. You guys are great.
Yeah, we're packing it in. But all the shows are free. All the shows are fun. So we're going to be talking to Michael Thomas about that.
All right. I'm looking forward to that. So good job, man. So anything else you want to say?
I know we're getting into some hot topics today, so I think it's important that we set the disclaimer.
Yes.
Yeah, see, the Thursday 8 o'clock Buzz, the views and opinions expressed on the Thursday 8 o'clock Buzz do not necessarily represent the opinions of the Warp Paid staff, our board of directors, or our millions and billions and trillions of volunteers. The Thursday 8 o'clock Buzz is for entertainment purposes only.
So there. All right, thank you very much. And good, here's your pay. You deserved it today.
All right, got the words out clean.
Here's a newspaper. Read it.
Is this the one that Marlin's in?
No, that was yesterday. Here's your banana. They're getting fresh. I don't know what the co-op's doing these days, but...
Oh, wow, that's a good one.
They're making sure that our bananas are yellow.
Oh, we got zucchini?
The zucchini bread.
Oh, wow. This is a thick one, too. They all say 4 ounces, but some of them are thicker. I can tell.
I know it. Well, whatever.
What about you, Tony? What's up with you, man?
I don't know. Oh, yeah. No, nothing, man.
Nothing's going on? I heard you were drinking beer somewhere fun tonight.
Well, I'm not, because I have to work.
Oh, yeah.
So,
don't you
there's a new,
Don't you have a new show after, is that tonight?
Oh, yeah. I'll be playing, doing my regular thing at the Cardinal, of course, at 5:30. But then after that, I'm going to be performing with Tony Giacchite and my good friend Luca from my band at the Weary Traveler at 8:15, playing some Mali and blues.
How's so that cool. different than what you normally do?
Well, I'll be playing bass guitar, man.
Oh, wow. I didn't know you played bass guitar.
Speaking of the devil, he's here, but we'll get to him in a minute, folks. In a minute, we're going to get to Charlie Poister. Thanks for sticking around as we were killing time there. And, yeah. Let's play some music.
Deja roncha por el mundo, que no te vaya a picar. Por medio de dictadura me empezaron a endeudar. Y ahora quiere que le paguemos lo que no se puede pagar. Que pica adentro, que pica afuera. Asesina a tu hermano y después te viene a cobrar. Por medio de la muerte me empezaron a endeudar. Y ahora quiere que le paguemos lo que no se puede pagar. Que pica adentro, que pica afuera.
Turn it down. God, it's a little loud.
Getting crazy here this morning, Tony. We're trying to wake the people up.
It's yeah, Mestizo Music, time. Rebellion in America Latina. That's from that CD. Doesn't even say who the band is, though. Hey, it's 8:14 joining us in the studio. We're very pleased to have, as promised, our good friend Charlie Schroeser, who's our Western Wisconsin correspondent for the Thursday Buzz. Charlie, sorry, we haven't checked in with you for a while, so obviously we missed all kinds of news during this gap. And good morning, and thank you for being here.
Oh, yeah, it's great to be here. Love the traffic.
Yeah, man, it was killing you, right?
Oh, yeah, it was bad. But your receptionist mentioned it's the state high school basketball tournament. I remember those days.
You're right. And usually in Madison, people who've been here for a long time, it always snows during this weekend. And I don't know if Eli's at in the weather report. Maybe we'll find out from the captain if we can get to him.
Weather report says rain. Not quite. I saw precipitation for sure. I guess not quite as cold as it used to be.
All right. Well, Charlie, now you're in town, though, because it's another one of those award ceremonies. And your small newspaper, the Kickapoo Scout in the
Crawford County Independent.
Is again a major award winner. How many awards are you guys winning? And what is the event?
It's the Wisconsin Newspaper Association, annual convention.
All right.
And yeah, we are fortunate to have won a lot of awards this year.
Like how many?
16.
So many. Holy, look at that, Eli.
That's too many.
That's some serious journalism stuff.
Well, maybe we just enter a lot.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, so it's relatively easy. All you got to do is sign up. And
it wasn't easy. And we're very proud to have an 18-year-old intern get a first-place award this year.
Awesome.
See, I was going to ask you, one of the things I want to talk about is your internship program. I mean, you are able to mentor people in the community. I mean, do they just like come up and say, hey, I want to work for the newspaper. I want to be a news guy.
Yeah.
And Charlie's like, okay, you don't got to go to school.
Well, you know, if you go back in history, there were people doing newspapers and writing news stories before there were journalism schools.
I guess so. Somebody had to do it.
Right. And so then journalism schools didn't come into play until the 20th century. There was no journalism schools before that.
Wow. So anybody really, you want to be a newspaper?
Well, you know, writer? Just the facts, ma'am, you know, the pad of paper and the pencil and, yeah.
What's the award that the 18-year-old won?
Oh, they do it like the Oscars now, so we don't know what it's for.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
I did figure out one of them. One of them one of our first place awards is for a photo page of the county fair in Crawford County, because I could tell by who entered it, you know, that's what that's going to be for.
Okay, so photography. Now, are there various categories, though, like for small-town newspapers? And what constitutes a small-town newspaper versus a big city like Madison newspaper?
Right now, I believe it's circulation under 2,500. That's for weeklies, and that makes the smallest category, and we're in it.
Okay. Well, I mean, and then, you know, we were mentioning a little bit about the importance of small town newspapers and what they can bring to the communities. And we've also talked and seen stories, not only here in Wisconsin, but around the country, of more and more of these small town newspapers. I guess they're dying.
Yes.
Well, not dying, they're going out of business.
Right.
Because I don't want to talk about death of them. But what, first of all, why is that happening, or why do you think that's happening? And also, how do you keep a small town newspaper alive like yours?
Well, there's a lot of reasons why that's happening. The obvious one is we have a lot of people that don't read paper product things anymore, you know. So that's affecting everything from the smallest to the largest. The online thing it's working, but it's a work in progress.
You guys are online now also. Right?
Sort of, yeah.
That's like the website for my band.
Yeah, hopefully it's a little better than that, but it's probably similar. We do get our stories out, and they do make a difference, and we do work really hard at it.
What about your online subscriptions? Can you an account on that, or what?
When you buy a subscription from us, which is $47 a year, or I don't know, something else if you buy 2 years, then you automatically are entitled to get an e-edition, and the beauty of the e-edition isn't for the, you know, people that live in the villages and towns around us in Crawford County. It's really for our diaspora, which is spread across the entire country. And it takes a long time now to mail. We have people in Florida that get three weekly newspapers at once. They wait 3 weeks and suddenly they're there. You know, the U.S. Postal Service is not what it used to be.
So I've heard. The other day you sent me some of the samples of your most recent articles, and I just kind of, I don't want to say it was quaint. It was actually stuff that's important. There's a bridge that washed out that connects, Lansing, Iowa with
Ferryville and DeSoto.
In Wisconsin,
yeah.
Yeah, and DeSoto, and the bridge is out. So the news is that there's a river ferry or a water ferry now that's taking people across a bridge. There was another big story about controversy over a landfill in is that in Crawford County?
And that's in Viroqua.
In Viroqua. And what's the controversy there?
That's in Vernon County. They want to expand it, and there's, you know, I mean, like, let's face it, the solution to landfills isn't really expanding them to put more in it. It's like to doing things to put less things in the landfill is the answer.
Right.
It's not, you know, make a bigger one. It's make less garbage.
Right.
And the stuff you make, take care of it where you make it, you know, compost it, get rid of it, you know, recycle it, go through all of that and really put an emphasis on that and really reduce your load.
These are things that are affecting small town America also. Yeah.
Well, yeah, it's a big deal there. The problem is in Viroqua, it's located in Viroqua Township on a rural area among farms, and the geology underneath it is karst, which is eroding limestone. And
very porous. So.
Yeah, and water makes it erode and make new channels. And you can eventually erode your way down into the groundwater. And the groundwater is the source of, through a well, is the source of municipal water in Viroqua.
So are you guys having drinking water problems there yet?
No, not yet.
Oh, okay.
But there, you know, I guess like all of the things that you see happen, like Flint, Michigan, and everywhere else, the time to deal with what's potentially the problem is now, not once you get it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if you're in a dangerous situation, like you have karst geology under a landfill, it's probably incumbent upon you to, like, think about that.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it is. Eli, don't you have a most amazing question about the new redistricting maps and how that's going to affect Charlie's part of the
State? The biggest thing when I was looking at the redistricting maps, and you have a newspaper called the Crawford County Gazette. Crawford County's changing representation. How does that impact the news reporting that you're doing out there?
Well, my reporter and Tony Castagnetta's friend, Gillian Pomplin, said the redistricting made Crawford County a political football.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
I thought that was a good observation.
All right. So how's it shaking over there?
How's that football being tossed around?
Well, I think we are now in a district that includes Dane County. I think if you get way into Western Dane County somewhere, it's in our district.
Really?
And all of like Iowa County and, you know, Grant, which is below us. We've never been with Grant. I mean, it's right across the Wisconsin River from us. Boscobel's in Grant, but you know.
Now the congressional districts did not get changed as of yet, but that was a real point of contention for you. Several years ago, you were explaining how they were drawn up in such a way to give the Republicans a bigger advantage.
A one-seat advantage, yeah. I suppose. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I'm not much of a fan of Iowa or Iowa politics, and I live 13 miles away from Iowa. But they do seem to have something going on with that redistricting that I think Wisconsin tried to take a lesson from, but needs to take more of the lesson, which is they have a nonpartisan
commission
that does this, and they seem to be both Democrats and Republicans, as far as I can tell, seem to be at ease with how it's done. And that would be monumental if Republicans and Democrats in the state of Wisconsin could live with the redistricting.
Well, a lot of Democrats and a lot of people are pushing for that type of a system in terms of the powers that be in charge of redistricting. Years ago, and then just recently when the maps got changed here, the Republicans, they always opposed that type of a setup. where they didn't have control. Of course, this time, though, they said, oh, we need an Iowa style.
Yeah.
What about that? What about their change of heart there?
Well, everybody has it. The ones that are like not going to benefit from it, you know, not in control, not in power, they want the nonpartisan commission. And the ones that are in power, they don't want it, you know, and it just switches back and forth. And that's no good because, you know, in talking to people in the congressional offices, Lauren Oldenburg is our state representative at the moment, and I called his office and talked to the person there, and I said, I really want to understand where we are, how it's going forward, and, you know, what's going to happen because, you know, it's not just partisan voting. You know, you have to have a representative. And when you need help, whether that representative is Democrat or, in Lauren Oldenburg's case, Republican, mm-hmm. you have to go to them. And when you're a person in need of help at the state level, you need to know who that is. Mm-hmm. There's a representation thing that supersedes party in a way.
And, of course, you always say how easier it is to just go across the street and there's your state representative living there, or you'll see him down at the, you know, at the country store there.
Right. Well, I mean.
While you're picking up your bag of grain to make your bread. Sorry, man. I should not be making fun of small town Wisconsin. I love it out there.
Well,
if
you know,
listening.
Demographics are changing, and there's more and more people starting to be interested in living in rural areas. And for good reason. I was in that traffic jam this morning. There were more cars in my traffic jam in Madison this morning than I think are in my county.
Do you think gentrification is going to be coming over to Soldiers Grove?
Well, yeah, we have seen that. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely.
Darn it.
Well, it doesn't surprise me. I know speaking of an anecdote of a personal friend of mine who moved to a small town in Indiana from Chicago, was able to keep his job, was able to work remote, and is now living in small town Indiana, still working his same job in Chicago. So it's as people are able to work remote, if that's the thing that's capable to them, maybe people are moving elsewhere.
Well, it's true. I just ran into somebody last night who works in California. She's got a job there, but she just moved to Madison, back to Madison. And she's like, yeah, hey,
we have a person with California roots that moved back and moved into our friend, my former reporter Emily's house when she sold it from L.A.
Wow.
And
it's
happening
everywhere, folks.
Her partner is like an actor or actress.
Wow. Yeah. Okay. Excellent. We're speaking with Charlie Preusser. He's the editor, and are you the publisher?
No, I'm not the publisher.
He's the editor of the Crawford County Independent Kickapoo Scout, and he's also our really knowledgeable correspondent there. Lets us know what's going on in Western Wisconsin. So a lot of stuff going on. What about the Van Orden race, Charlie? Is he going down or what?
I don't know. He doesn't have a real sterling record in office.
No, he doesn't.
But
he just shouted down Joe Biden a couple days ago right at State
of
the
Union. That's less. I mean, he's gotten into altercations with what I would call children. I guess they are teenagers, you know. But it's sort of like a Navy SEAL, like, confronting teenagers in the Capitol or in the Prairie du Chien Library or something.
Yeah.
That's kind of weird, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. He is kind of weird. And there were some questions about his background, too. Right when he was running, he said he was...
We could never interview him. They were totally unresponsive.
Really?
Yeah.
Even for the Crawford County Independent?
Yeah, we couldn't. It's like the only candidate I ever encountered that absolutely, no matter how much I put into it, they would not return calls, they would not return email, they stonewalled us.
Wow.
We never got a statement from him.
Well, what did you know? What did you figure out? Did you find out anything about his background? I mean, he says he's salt of the earth, poor guy, but there were some questions of whether or not he went to a private school when he was growing up, or what?
I don't know if he went to a private school, but I don't
think...
This
is all off the... I mean, this is not verified.
Thursday,
everybody.
8 o'clock a, buzz. Yes, views and opinions expressed on the Thursday, 8 o'clock buzz do not necessarily represent.
All right, now let's go. Let's talk some more.
Well, there was
rumors.
There was a period of time where his family... moved to Oregon, and
the real one,
Yeah, the state Oregon, of Oregon. Yes. Okay. And I didn't research it that much, but it didn't look like they were living in abject poverty in Oregon. It was kind of seemed like a affluent suburb of somewhere.
All right. Okay.
Portland or somewhere. I don't know.
All right. Well, yeah. That's how we got on him so far, Eli.
Well, I mean,
other than he likes to yell at kids.
It's important to have somebody that's knowledgeable of the district. He just moved into the district. He ran against Brad Pfaff, whatever people think of Brad Pfaff. Brad Pfaff is very knowledgeable about agriculture and also is like a fifth generation resident of that district. Mm-hmm. So there's, you know, and Van Orden like wasn't in the district and moved into the district to run against Ron Kind.
And of course the Democrats did not really put any effort behind Pfaff in that whole race. They kind of ignored it. So, you know, well, yeah, here's a guy, Van Orden. He likes to yell at teenagers, and he likes to yell at old people, obviously, because he yelled at Joe Biden last Thursday.
He'll yell at me next time.
He won't.
I'm an old people now, you know. My birthday's March 25th. I'll be 71.
Oh, wow, man. It's rough. All right, Eli, you got a question there?
Well, I said I was commenting on just the Van Orden thing where, you know, if you're going to be a representative of a district, it feels like you should be able to be contacted by members of that district, especially people who are looking out for the interest of those constituents.
The press.
Yes.
There you go. There
yeah, and that was my point earlier about this whole redistricting thing that I was making to Lauren Oldenburg's staff is, you know, there's this thing beyond partisanship that you represent a geographical area. And if I'm in that geographical area, whether I voted for you or didn't vote for you, that you are my representative. And, you know, that is how we have to approach government, through those people that are elected.
And that's the way you approach your journalism work too, Charlie. And I really appreciate you being here and fighting through all that traffic. Man, be careful driving home, man.
Reminded me of my 17-year taxi cab driving career.
In Madison.
Yeah, in Madison, Milwaukee, yeah.
All right, Charlie, thank you so much. And again, congratulations on all those awards you're getting. I'll hear about it later on today when I run into you later on at the Cardinal Barn. You're going to see Eli's comedy show.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I just want to say one thing about that bridge thing. We just mentioned it briefly. The bridge thing from Wisconsin to Iowa at Lansing and kind of at Ferryville to DeSoto on the Wisconsin side is important because if you don't cross the bridge there, you have to go 50 to 80 miles to get to the other side.
I remember when it washed out, when you guys had the flooding.
Because there's like you have to go to La Crosse or Prairie du Chien, which are 25 and 35 miles away.
Wow.
And then you have to get back to where you were because all you're trying to do is go across the river. And like,
so what's the word on that bridge?
When we have school teachers. Well, they say 2 months. They're building a new bridge next to it, and it's not confirmed, but everybody kind of speculates that the building of the new bridge right in the river right next to it and all the pounding and whatever probably might have caused the failure of this.
Okay.
So now they're building new piers on the old one, but it'll take them two months at least to complete. So that's where this ferry is going to come into play.
Right.
It's the other problem with that, Tony, is it's a rural thing. You know, it's like this bridge is vital to tens of thousands of people at the most.
Daily, on a daily basis.
Yeah, well, on a daily basis, it's probably just thousands,
right?
You know, if right. that, yeah. You know. But, I mean, people live on one side of the river and they cross this couple mile. It's a bridge and a causeway together and stuff. They cross a couple of miles and they're on the other side in the other state, and then they work there. Then they go home. Well, then all of a sudden there's no bridge and they have to go take an hour and a half trip.
It's like the olden days, man. Yeah. Wow.
So anyway.
Yeah, all right.
I just wanted to clarify that a little bit. The importance of, that's probably the longest span on the upper Mississippi River between bridges.
Right.
Between La Crosse and Prairie du Chien. Without that bridge in there, that's then it's like, you know, it's long to begin with, and then that's got to be the longest. Just
those of us in a big city might think something like that is trite, but it's really, it's very vital to those communities.
Well, when I lived in Milwaukee and crossed the Milwaukee River, there was a bridge every couple blocks.
All right,
so
Charlie.
If they closed one, you just went to the other.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
It wasn't 25 miles away.
Hey, have fun, man, at the thing today. Yeah. Get some awards and bring them over to the Cardinal Bar tonight and show them to us.
Oh, we don't get them till tomorrow, man.
Oh,
man.
All right.
But we are going to go down there and see you. And I'm glad I'm here. I'm glad I made it to Madison.
Right.
And I'm glad the state basketball tournament is going to be all over the streets. I remember that.
All right.
That's great that they still do that and didn't move it to Racine or something. Later, you guys.
All right, Charlie.
Thanks,
Charlie Preusser, there you have it. In a minute, we're going to get to our artist in residence, Marlon Hall, talk about his project. Right now, I think we'll try to go to a little music here, if it works. It's 8:38. You are tuned into the Thursday 8 o'clock buzz here on WORT Radio, your listener-sponsored community radio station. Thank you, everybody, by the way, for pledging all your support the last couple weeks. I don't know how much money we made, but I think we made some anyhow, right? We didn't do too good on our show, though, Eli.
I don't want to guilt our listeners too bad, but I know we were worse than we've been in years past.
No, we're not guilting them. It's our fault.
Guilting us.
It's
okay,
us.
Good.
It's
just wanted to make sure that we'll make sure that was clear.
All right. Well, like I said, joining me, I'm very pleased to have Marlon F. Hall. He's the artist in residence here at the UW Madison. He is working on this Dear Black Future Madison story. Can you talk a little bit about the origins of your project? And first of all, thank you very much for being here, Marlon.
Oh, man, no problem. I'm super excited.
All right.
Certainly, Dear Black Future is an exhibition that launched out of Tulsa, Oklahoma, where I've been living. First of all, how you doing, man? My name is Marlon.
Oh, nice to meet you. I just walked in.
Sorry.
I'm Eli.
Good. Yeah, I appreciate you, man. Tony, appreciate thank you so
here.
Much
oh, of course,
for allowing
right.
me to be here, man. Mm-hmm. But we jump off in here.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, I was living and working in Tulsa, Oklahoma as an artist and anthropologist. Did a commission with Bloomberg Philanthropies, some work with Google Arts and Culture, some work with PBS SoCal as a Tulsa Artist Fellow. And I kept recognizing that the history of the place was haunting me in my sleep. I lived literally on the site of the massacre. And some mornings I'd wake up from dreams, nightmares, that my mattress was in a graveyard. And I recognized that Tulsa, even though popularly people knew it as the site of the 1921 massacre, is known as a graveyard and the massacre was atrocious and should not have happened and should never be forgotten. But Tulsa is not a graveyard. Tulsa is a garden. Mm-hmm. And gardens have decomposed elements of life in them as well. And they move towards the beautiful cycle of life, death, and renewal. And so in my experience in Tulsa, Oklahoma, seeing the resilient gene that's inherent in every human being rising from the ashes, I knew that I was responsible as an artist to cultivate a re-narrating incubator of my work in Tulsa. So when Black History came along, this amazing park in Tulsa, Gathering Place, commissioned me to do a Black History Month exhibition during the year of the centennial, 100 years from the 1921 massacre. And I said, you know what? What if we reimagined Black History Month as a time portal that normally we access the past through with our backs to the future and our faces to the past? What if we were to reorient and re-narrate Black history by imagining a Black future in a city known for its horrific past? And so Dear Black Future was that re-narrating incubator. It was a place for Tulsans to come in and to write a four-word letter to the future of the Black community, a verb, a noun, a preposition. Some people are like, what's a preposition? to, for, from, with, okay. Verb, noun, preposition, noun. And we collected over 700 of those. We exhibited some amazing photos from Burroughs Elementary. And that's just really a whisper of my work in the world. And my work here in Madison is not just about Dear Black Future. It's really about cultivating a space where we can all come together to cross-pollinate our differences, to grow something together that we can't grow on our own culturally.
And how did that work? How successful was that project?
That project was funky, bro. I mean, man, over 700 people wrote letters to the future of the Black community.
And using only four words, too.
Uh-huh.
Including a preposition,
yeah.
All right, and like, what were some of the samples? I mean, I was curious when they did that. I was like, what can you say in four words? And you're saying it to the future, right?
Yeah. One of them was create possibility from pain.
Oh.
Another was transform hate into love, you know? And so people were writing letters, and on the back of the little four-word note card, I invited people to write a letter of gratitude to someone who represents their Black history now. Because if history is a part of time, for me, time is eternal. And so right now we're living history. Like, I'm making history by being here. This is a historic moment.
Yeah,
you know
right,
what I mean?
Good. Yeah, well, we're in the first time here at WORT Radio Studios in Madison, Wisconsin. Yeah. So now, that program was very successful. All right, so now you're here in Madison. You're doing your residency, and you're going to do it in Madison. Same concept, Black Future, right?
You know, Dear Black Future is part of the work that I'm doing. It's an appendage to the work that I'm doing. And I first want to acknowledge Associate Dean Faisal Abdul Allah, who invited me through a program through the Division of the Arts as an interdisciplinary artist in residence. Mm-hmm. So I just kind of want to lay that out. I appreciate
them
so
much. Okay,
no,
of course, yeah.
So Dear Black Future was really Oscar Morales. I was talking to Oscar about my film. Mm-hmm. Oscar was like, man, it's Black History Month, man. Why don't you screen your film at the Omega School?
Right.
I was like, cool. So I screened the film, and that part of it went viral. But I was brought here by the division to teach a class and to start a project with those students called From a Door at the Center of a Table. Mm-hmm. I grew up making upholstery, man, and I've returned to my father's origin as an artist to create tables that are 12-foot tables with archival doors in the center. I've done it all over the world. And I invite 16 culturally and cognitively diverse people. No one person does the same thing for a living, but the only rule is that you can't talk about what you do for a living.
Oh, man.
Only who you are for life.
Yeah.
And on Sunday, I did the 88th of those dinners.
Mm-hmm.
I've done them in Venice. I've done them in Nairobi. I've done them in the outermost parts of the nation.
And how does it work? I mean, that's another part of your art.
This is
art. It's bringing food and gathering, you know, and as art, all right?
Yeah.
So I kind of want to talk about how do you relate food as into art?
You know, what's interesting, man, is that for so long we've put art in a cardboard box.
Mm-hmm.
And there are multiple expressions of being creative, and for me, being a professional artist. I'm a social sculptor. a dude by the name of Joseph Boys in the early 1970s decided that he would make his community to be the clay that he would sculpt by doing projects that would shape human flourishing, cultivate human possibility. And so be it my large-scale photography, be it my filmmaking, like the film that I screened with Oscar, be it these dinner tables that I make or these meals, I'm answering your question, that move in three different stanzas. The first stanza invites people to come and to talk about their personal story. Second stanza, it's an experiential poem, which is why I move it in stanzas. Second is around your cultural story. And the third is around a shared global story. And there are three practices that are inherently woven into every meal. The first is to invite guests to bring a pocket-sized artifact that represents their personal or cultural heritage. So then everybody shows up at their dinner, and I'm inviting all of the city of Madison, Milwaukee, like Wisconsin, the whole state to do this. Invite people. You can invite as few as four people, as few as one other person to have dinner with. They bring a totem, an artifact that represents their cultural heritage, and then they pass it around to allow other people to hold the weight of the narrative of their people. And so an artifact. And then the host thinks of who in history they'd like to invite to the dinner that they can't because of time. And then they think of those quotes, the quotes that that person would bring to the table, the language, the ideas, the effort, right? And if there are four people coming to the dinner, you choose two quotes, you make two copies of each quote. And then when people come in, you say, hey, choose the quote that chooses you. And people choose that quote, and then they end up sitting next to the person who shares their quote. And y'all, I've done this 88 times.
Wow.
Right? And 90% of the time, the people who share the quote, because they're culturally and cognitively diverse as a group, they don't share nothing else.
Yeah.
And they sit next to each other for the first 5 minutes, scared as hell, wondering why can't they sit next to the people who look like them or do things like them. But by the end of the dinner, they become kin.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. And so then the last principle or practice is to invite people to write a four-word story to the future of the world. The four-word story is a riff off of Ernest Hemingway's six-word story.
Yeah.
And it's just a way to reduce language to the least common denomination to get to the crust of the pie of what makes life, what makes love sweet. You know what I'm saying? Right.
Brevity is the source of wit.
Oh, brevity is the source of wit. I must be silly because I use a lot of words.
Well, how is this? How are the mechanics? How is this going to work out now? You're inviting the community to do this.
Man, look, man, I have lovingly collaborated with the Dane County Food Collective, the Division of the Arts, with REAP Madison, with, can I talk a little bit about my class?
Sure. Why not?
We invite.
We got a couple more minutes, though, so let's go. That's,
I got
you. Go ahead.
Yeah, I got citizens who come to the class who bring an artifact. Then there are musicians commissioned by CODA with Hannah John Taylor who play a song that represents their story. And then a culinary artist with Feed Kitchens who prepares a meal that tells their story. So each class is an experiential learning experience.
The Feed Kitchen stories are great because I've been doing blogs and interviewing there with all the folks that are there. It's
so
just amazing.
Funky.
Yeah, man.
And so we've collaborated with all of those institutions in addition to Dane County Food Collective to invite people to do what's called a mosaic dinner. And so go to the Dane County Food Collective website. Go to my social media. The handle for the movement is called the Mosaic Dinner Movement.
Mosaic Dinner, right?
So if you want to host a Mosaic Dinner Movement, it's super easy. You could do it in your home. All we ask is that you invite people who are culturally and cognitively diverse that you know so that they each bring an ancestral wealth to the table that we all need to change the world.
Is it required that people document these things?
They do. They it's, well, it's, at I mean, the it's, end,
it'd be
not
nice
during.
If they could. Okay,
but
yes.
They take pictures of the food in the beginning. They take pictures of the four-word stories that they write to the future. They take pictures of the totems, and then we're going to upload them. And at the end of my residency, I'm going to read all of the stories that people collect. We're trying to get 250 homes to host a dinner.
Wow.
So far, I think we have 50 people signed up. So, listeners, let's go. Change the world one meal at a time.
How can people reach you if they want to be involved in this project?
I'm MarlonFHall.com is my website. I'm Marlon at MarlonHall.com. And my social media, man, hang out with me on social media. Marlon F. Hall on social media, Dane County Food Collective.
And I want to let people know that in yesterday's Wisconsin State Journal, there was on page three, there's actually a nice story about the work that you're doing.
I know.
So I'm glad you got to see that finally. But they can check out more and they can contact you in that way if they want to take part in this, Marlon.
Yeah, not if they want to, because they must.
They must. Okay. Yeah. Once you're on.
Okay. Thank you, man.
Marlon, thank you so much.
All right,
it's
man.
Great to see you.
Now. Thank
I
you.
I like what you're doing. I'm sorry we can't do the Thursday
thing. What I'm doing
thing.
Likes you too, man. I'm
all
telling
right.
you.
All right.
All right.
All right, Marlon Hall. In a minute, who's our next guest?
We got Michael Thomas.
Michael Thomas is coming now. We're going to talk about the improv thingy.
I told you.
Well, all right, man.
The Endurance Improv Festival.
I forgot. All right, the Endurance Improv Festival. All right. All right, we got. Yeah, never mind.
Good job, Tony.
Yeah, we got it. I'm good.
Awesome. Thanks for being here, man. All right. Thank you.
It's 8:51, 8:52 now, and you still are turned into Thursday 8 o'clock buzz. Join us live in the studio. Hey, this has been a long time that all of our guests have been live, man.
I think this might be the first time we've had three live guests.
There were a couple times some people were dead. But Michael Thomas here with Atlas Improv, and it's going to be
The Endurance Improv Festival at Atlas Improv is coming up next week.
All right. I should tell my producer to write that stuff down.
From March 21st to March 23rd. Michael Thomas, what is the Endurance Improv Festival?
Yeah, so we're Atlas Improv has been in Madison for about 20 years now, and we are celebrating 20 years with, over the course of 3 days, 20 hours of improv. Back when I first joined, it was 14, 15 hours. We could do it all in one day. It was so nice. But now we want to make sure everyone can actually enjoy it all.
So it goes from what time to what time?
We're starting on Thursday with a short-form improv show. I believe that's at 7. It's a tournament. We're going to have a bunch of people coming from all over. People signed up. We're going to have a bunch of teams, see what happens.
Really?
Yeah.
I never really quite understood how improv works. I mean, you see these guys on some of those shows on TV where they're given a subject and they got a riff on that. Mm-hmm. I mean, is that the same? Is that how it works with you guys, you improv guys?
Yeah, I mean, it really depends on what we're doing. Sometimes it's a little scene that's inspired by something that was said. Someone might say shovel, and we just do a scene about a funeral. It's nothing too outrageous.
Now, is this something that you do before you actually become a real comedian?
I don't know. Ask Eli.
I'm asking Eli. Well, I guess I should. Well, I mean,
no, man.
How does that work? Do you go from one to the other, or can you be both?
So improv is its own art form, man. It's its own thing. People have the ability to come out and see shows, and you know, there's festivals all over the country. Like Michael said, we have people coming in from all over the country. Professional improvisers who tour around and do improv are coming to Madison. So
this is a big thing.
Yeah, it's not a
20 anniversary. It's not.
Yeah,
this is not a halftime show at the Cardinal Bar.
Yeah, that's are you telling me that's more real comedy? That's
no. All right, so we're talking about the Endurance Improv Festival. Again, it's next weekend, right?
Yeah, so starting on Saturday is the big day. We're starting at noon. We have a workshop early in the morning. We have a guest improviser coming in, teaching a little bit more. But starting at noon all the way until, I believe, 2 in the morning, we're just going to be doing improv. We have the guests lined up. and it's all free that day. So anyone can come in at any time, just sit down, watch them.
And it goes till how late?
Noon to 2 a.m.
Really?
Yeah.
All right, so anytime. And that's next Saturday.
It's next mm-hmm. Saturday.
Remind me, because I think I'm going to come and check it out.
Yeah, please do. It's 609 East Washington.
Yeah.
All right. And but who are some of the... who are some of the guests from around the country that
so
are
a lot of what we're trying to do right now is we're trying to emphasize a lot of Atlas alumni. So we have Atlas members who have moved on to New York, D.C., all over. We're bringing a lot of them back. They're performing.
Any of them famous?
We've had a couple who have become writers on Daily Show.
Oh, okay.
I don't know if they are coming back. We've had one former member was the assistant to Paul Rudd on a number of Marvel movies. So,
hey. That's something.
It's not nothing.
It's not nothing. Not.
All right.
But go ahead.
Go ahead. No, Eli.
Well, I was going to say, because I know, Michael, you know, you mentioned this short form tournament. I have two questions for you. Kind of how does short form improv differentiate from long form improv? And then a follow up question, a tournament. So people are judging improv. How do you judge improv? How do you decide what's good and bad when people are doing
improv? First of all, say that's the most excellent question, Eli.
It's a very good question, Eli.
Awesome, thank you.
So answer the first one first. Short form and long form, the really only big difference is how long you're on stage for. But it does completely change how you approach what you're doing. It's so much easier to build an entire world or environment from when you have 20 minutes on stage that you're able to actually work together with others and create these connections and make these world rules that get paid off over time. Short form, you kind of just focus on the nitty gritty. You got these relationships that can be fun that you really can explore and try to have a quick little jaunt in.
Do you need special personality traits to become a good improv person, or is it something that can be taught that you can learn how to do?
Oh, we think anyone can be taught. I think that it definitely all it takes is really just an open mind, being able to accept other people's ideas and bring them forward and, you know, kind of make something out of it using your own ideas. So if you're able to say yes to the person next to you, that's really all it takes.
All right. But you got to be a quick thinker, Eli?
Well, so a lot of improv is just reacting to situations as you yourself would normally act, especially at Atlas. You know, it's kind of one of the philosophies we have is, you know, that the real world is funny and absurd enough. So if something silly happens and you react to that as you yourself normally would, you can, you know, find the funny in everyday situations.
Now comedy sports, as an example, I mean, people think that it's a competitive thing, these improv things, and you got to be, you rate people or you judge them by, you know, how do you grade?
Oh, yeah.
How do you grade improv? I don't get it.
Every Saturday or Friday and Saturday, we have our 7 o'clock show where we have two teams go head-to-head. Theater sports is what we call it.
Okay.
And how do you judge? It's all made up. You can't really judge anything like that. Maybe one team has a taller player and you like that.
Okay, so then, yay.
Yeah, it's just water on the duck's back. You just have to accept what happened, and you just got to move on. If you really think you did the best improv of your life, and the other team
but won. How do you know who won?
Oh, the audience will cheer.
Really?
Yeah, and the audience, you know, even if you don't give them a criteria, audiences know
how it works.
Audiences have opinions on everything, man. So, you know, talk about the trust your gut phenomenon. Oh, yeah, Tony's never had an opinion on anything in his life.
Yeah, so, wow. Because, yeah, I'm just wondering how that works. And actually, my daughter just the other day said, oh, I want to get into improv.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, if she's interested in coming out and doing improv, we actually do free workshops the first Thursday of every month.
Okay, you do? What time?
It's at 6:30 on the first Thursday,
okay.
Right after work. We call it happy hour, but we don't serve any drinks, and we just...
And Atlas, people got to know where you guys are. You're right over there on East Washington Avenue, 600 block, right?
Yep, 609 East Washington.
It's kind of, what shall I say, inauspicious building? Or is,
well, you know, unfortunately, the Korean restaurant next to us has a real big sign, and so we got to get a big sign like that, because, you know, people always come in thinking we're a Korean restaurant, and... Yeah.
Well, maybe you should just tell everybody we're right next to the big sign for that Korean restaurant. That's where we are. And, that place. Okay, we know where it's at.
Every time you mention the Korean restaurant, people go, oh, actually, I do know where that is. So.
It was better back in the day when we had the 5-star barbecue there.
Yeah.
And they had the guy with the pig sign, a pig suit just holding up the sign. We're like, yeah, next to that guy.
I think we got to make our own pig suit sign, bring it back.
Yeah.
All right. So Say the event again, please, Eli, since you got it written down there.
The Endurance Improv Festival at Atlas Improv starts next week, Thursday, March 21st, with the Atlas Open Short Form Improv Tournament. Show's on Friday, and then the full marathon is on Saturday, starting at noon and going until 2 a.m. All the shows are free. People are coming from all across the country. When are you performing, Michael? When are you going to be on stage?
I don't know yet.
The Saturday thing sounds good, though, that noon till 2 a.m.
Yeah, so you don't
stop
even
by and,
you don't
as a matter of fact, stop in
starts
at 1 o'clock, and yeah, we'll see where you guys are at 1 in the morning.
The 1 a.m. show is always a treat.
Yes. All right. Hey, Michael Thomas, thank you very much. Eli, thank you very much. We got to get going. It's the end of the show. It's 9 o'clock.
And what happened?
Michael Thomas, yeah, thank you.
Yeah, thanks,
and, thanks, Michael.
Yeah, man. What about Aaron Rodgers being vice president? No, that's
we got
all right.
Round.
Thanks a lot, everybody. Want to thank our good friend Marlon Hall and, of course, Charlie Preusser from the Crawford County Independent. Everybody, be cool. What else we got to say? We're done. This is WRT 89.9 FM in Madison, Wisconsin. Stay tuned for Hajira with Jeff Spitzer Resnick.
Good show, Tony.
Thanks, man.
Yeah, it's a part of the show.
This is the Insurgent Radio Kiosk for Thursday, March 14th.
Well, well, well. Look who's waking up and raring to go. Mr. and Ms. Woke. We so-called woke people have been the target of far-right politicos and front groups that are frantically trying to ban us and our ideas from America's political discourse. In the past few years, such thuggish gubernatorial demagogues as Ron DeSantis have perverted the power of big government to attack teachers, librarians, public agencies, and even beer. Beer! Why? Because such people and organizations make educational efforts to reduce bigotry, hatred, and exclusiveness in our society. That's woke, screeched the ultra-rightists, demanding that any talk about racism, sexism, gender discrimination, or other ugly realities in America must be suppressed. Like the witch hunters of old, today's pious Puritans of ideological conformity have demonized such basic values as diversity and equity, calling them toxic. DeSantis outlawed any teaching of them in Florida universities, and then he cut sociology from the core curriculum of the state's educational system, essentially cutting out us, the study of humanity. If ignorance is bliss, the DeSantis clique must be ecstatic, for they are